Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Liz Dunshee, and my very accomplished and amazing co-host is Courtney Camlett.
Thanks, Liz. Hi, everyone, and Happy New Year.
For this episode, we're talking with Allison O'Neill, partner and co-chair of the White Collar and Internal Investigations Practice at Locke Lord, where she is also a member of the firm's executive committee. Allison helps companies and individuals navigate regulatory and internal investigations, litigation and enforcement matters, compliance issues, and crisis management situations. She has also spent time as a prosecutor over the course of her career, so lots of variety there. We're very excited to be talking with you today, Allison. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Allison, our listeners are dying to know about your career path. What is your favorite part of leading internal investigations and white collar defense matters?
Well, I think it sort of started when I was a prosecutor. It was the first job I had where I actually got paid for my judgment, something that I sort of remind myself when I'm conducting investigations today. Being a prosecutor taught me how to listen. It taught me how to look for cues where someone may not be telling the truth. And it taught me too that details matter, and to be precise with my words and my language. Today, I try and bring all of those things to my practice of investigations and white collar defense. What I like about my job and my favorite part of what I do is trying to understand the course of human interactions and how often when something goes wrong, it is the interplay between humans of some sort of schism that caused it to go wrong. I had a case several years ago where it involved an investigation involving fraud at a company, and it all started because of it. Two of the founders had a conversation where each one thought that the other one was stealing from them, and it happened in at the bar at the Washington Duke Hotel. And when we figured that out, we could figure out where everything went wrong with in the company. And my colleagues and I refer to it as the Washington Duke moment, that moment when you suddenly realize what the case is all about or what went wrong at the company to cause someone to make a bad decision.
Wow.
That bar is right down the street from me in Raleigh. I didn't realize it was so infamous.
Well, Courtney recently was in that area and I had to go into the bar. I mean, this case was more than 10 years old and I stood at the bar. They drank beer and I'm not a beer drinker, but I had to have a beer at the Washington Duke because of that case.
Sounds like you're part psychologist too. So, how have you seen internal investigations evolve over the past 5 to 10 years? There have been a lot of developments in the corporate governance space during that time. Have you seen improvements in the process or more complexities? What's been happening?
I think there's a higher standard and a higher bar, but one that causes us to rely on the use of experts more in such a great way. I think when I first started doing investigations, the attorney was supposed to understand everything and really be the translator of the corporate documents or even what the company does. And now I think we use experts in internal investigations so much more, and that has been great, whether it be a computer forensic person or an accountant. And even more recently, the use of AI. And I know now you can just reach out to an expert that can really help you understand even what the business does, something along those lines, where I felt like 5, 10 years ago, we didn't utilize experts in the same manner that we do today.
Yeah, the AI piece is very interesting and very timely. I know that, AI has been around for a while. The large language model version of it is the newer one, but AI has definitely been around for a while.
I think it has such a negative connotation right now and in the law, and people are nervous about it. They're nervous about it copying briefs or things along those lines. But it's not a dirty word, particularly when you're sifting through information and to be used to help speed up investigations. Because, of course, whenever you're conducting an investigation, time is a factor, and it has certainly helped speed up rather than having someone sift through or conduct all sorts of searches on emails.
That's a really good point.
What are the top three things companies and advisors should do right now in light of current SEC enforcement trends? I know a lot of people are worried about the signals the SEC is sending with whistleblower payouts and technical disclosure control footfall. Plus, we are all navigating disclosure rules that could be fodder for even more enforcement and litigation. It's really hard to know what to focus on these days.
Well, I think if we learned anything from 2023, it was the record-breaking year that the SEC's whistleblower program had. SEC issued whistleblower awards nearly 600 million. and there was a record break award. Yes, there was a single whistleblower who received a payment of $279 million. I think my biggest takeaway has to do with whistleblower and whistleblower tips. They're not going to stop. There were 18,000 tips last year. And I think that number is only going to increase, especially when people see payouts totaling $279 million. So all of my thoughts about going forward are to really, if you receive information that maybe doesn't have any proof or doesn't have any backing, if somebody comes to you with a problem, I think there's a real onus on companies right now to look into it, even if it feels flimsy, even if the individual that's coming to you is a known complainer. People are going to be get in trouble when that tip hasn't been taken seriously. And the other thing that I would tell companies to think about is use of Jabber, chats, all of that information. It's certainly an area where people are casual in their language. And I've seen time and time again, text or a thread taken out of context. We kiddingly refer to the uninformed informant, someone that has a piece of what's actually going on at the company, says something over a Teams chat. It is, a photo is taken of it, it is handed over to some government enforcement agency, and suddenly an investigation goes on and on that really shouldn't have been because of a stray conversation over a Teams chat.
Yeah, one of my companies, we used to do this training called Right, specifically to take into account things like that, because it can be taken very much out of context and can be very harmful in litigation.
One thing I would say to folks is people should be picking up the phone more, because, you know, we had a case here where someone said, if we did that, it would be the F word. They meant fraud. They were kidding. It was a conversation between two friends at a company, a healthcare company. And, you know, we spent years trying to get this company out of, you know, a state AG investigating them, thinking that there was fraud there when there really wasn't. And that we're seeing that more and more. And, you know, people need to go into a conference room if they're there, or get on a Zoom or get on a Teams or pick up the phone and have the dialogue. The casual conversations over chat are being captured and causing all sorts of problems.
Wow, that is very important advice to keep in mind. Age old wisdom, pick up the phone if you need to talk with somebody. Kind of as a follow-up to that, a lot of people in our audience advise boards of directors and make disclosure and compliance decisions on a daily basis, whether it's internal records or public disclosures. Do you have general suggestions for what we can do on that side at the front end to save ourselves from future headaches?
Sure. I mean, I think a general suggestion is to have meaningful trainings and to hire good compliance folks, whether it's a compliance officer or GC. And then to empower those folks to make real decisions and change within your corporation. I think too, when you're thinking about the personality of your compliance officer, general counsel, they need to be somebody that's approachable so that people can go to them and have a conversation. And their first point of contact is that person rather than a government enforcement officer. So when you think about who it is that you want in that position, you want someone that you're employees can go to and say, I'm worried about this, or I have a concern about where we are right now, without that person reacting in such a way that people are scared to go to them. And the personality of that person hearing it isn't asking, how did we get here? They're trying to figure out a solution or trying to figure out what's going on. It also shouldn't be the sort of person that as soon as something goes wrong, they want to make a disclosure, because certainly there's been a lot of talk under this administration about making meaningful disclosures, but not every mistake warrants a disclosure. And being able to understand what rises to that level, I think, is very important. Mm-hmm. Then a smaller kind of practical tip for those of you that may be listening that draft board meeting minutes, I would give real thought about when you bring in your attorneys, whether you bring them in for the entire meeting. Claims of privilege are difficult to make. And I think the government's pushing back when you claim privilege on an entire meeting. So the use of your counsel, I would be judicious in that. Bring them in when it's real. Make sure you're not bringing them in for anything that could be called a business decision. Bring them in very limited and in specific key points. It also makes it a lot easier for a future reviewer when that is not the entire meeting, but a certain segment of the meeting.
Those are all good suggestions, really important ones. Now, the question that we ask all of our participants is, what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the current conversation on the societal role of companies?
I think women's EQ is very strong, and I think it's much stronger than our male counterparts. So it sounds very trite to say, but I think women in corporations should be trusting their gut more and more, even when they feel that they might not have the confidence to do so. Women sense when something might not be right, when there might be a problem, and trusting their gut and listening to their gut, I think, is the biggest thing that women should be doing within their organizations.
You know, in this age of artificial intelligence, as we all move forward with that, I think emotional intelligence among humans in general is going to become more and more important. And that's going to probably be what continues to give humans any sort of edge over the artificial intelligence. And so I just think that's so important and something, as we look ahead to this new year, that we can probably all continue to hone.
Totally agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Allison. That was an awesome conversation. Good practical pointers for our audience, and we loved hearing from you.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on.
Yeah. So for those who are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts. We would love if you would rate us while you're there. And in addition, if you know a women governance trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on this show, feel free to ping Courtney or me on either LinkedIn or by email. Thanks, everyone.